Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Well, we journey into another week on the game plan, and joining me is my co-host, Charlie Coyner. Charlie, always great to talk ball with you.
Good to be here, Keith. October football, that's what it's all about.
Well, Charlie, we've had a variety of coaches on the game plan this season, and this next guy that we're going to have up here, I think, you know, to have a guy like this on your staff is a bonus. Thinking through, and our guest today is going to be a special teams guy, not just the special teams, but the specialist, a guy who can coach the kickers, the punters, the long snappers. In my career, 27 years, I had 1 year at the high school level and 1 year at the small college level where we had that guy who specifically was going to coach the technique of those guys and monitor them all practice long. And it's a luxury. I mean, I've been at Division I schools and working with their coaching staff, seeing what they're doing, and a lot of those guys don't even have that guy. So where as hard as it is to find a kicker and punter who's really good, I think it's even harder to find that specialist coach who can train those guys up.
It's an incredible luxury. And I coming from personal experience, I've always been pretty fortunate. In my 30 years of coaching, I've always been involved with special teams, you know, one aspect or the other, sometimes being totally in charge of it. And I've been fortunate from a standpoint when I was at the Chicago Bears with Dave Tobe, Dave always liked to be with the kicker and the punter. He really enjoyed that time. And so I was his assistant. So that kind of got me off the hook there and lit it up that way. And then, but other places I've been, it can be a real issue. Now, when I was at Tennessee, University of Tennessee is where I met our guest today, Taylor Mehoff. Taylor was just a true blessing that showed up from a standpoint of Derek Dooley, our head coach, knew about him and we worked him into our staff. But it's not as much as maybe not understanding what to tell them, because you can, it's like any other position, you can learn that. But it's like you're talking about to me. It's more about understanding what they go through. It's understanding exactly what they should be doing in practice, how much or not enough and all that. So yeah, it's a big time issue that I think probably every coach out there that's had anything to do with special teams has run into.
Well, I'll give a rundown here of Taylor's credentials, and they're pretty impressive. So going back to his playing days, he was a kicker, one of the greatest kickers in Badgers history, two-time Lou Groza Award semifinalist. He was an All-American, All-Big Ten, and converted 21 of 25 field goals as a senior in 2007 before being selected in the sixth round of the 2008 draft by the New Orleans Saints. He kicked with the Saints, he kicked with the Vikings, and since then he's moved on to the college level. He spent some time as a quality control assistant at Tennessee, again working with the Vols there with their special teams units. He's even become part of the NFL Coaches Academy, which is an event that's aimed at assisting in the development of up-and-coming college coaches. So, Taylor, he's done some stuff in his career, but it seems that his best stuff is ahead of him.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be a part of the deal at Tennessee with him, and I can just tell you he's an up-and-coming, young, bright mind in the special teams world. And he's growing from really coaching a specialist into being a overall good special teams coach. So you're right, his future is very bright.
Well, let's get him here on the podcast and talk to him about specialists. Taylor, it's great to have you here on the podcast. We appreciate you taking some time today.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Taylor, good to talk to you again. You guys got it rolling up there north in Wisconsin again. I'm sure y'all got a big one coming. I think you got Nebraska coming up this week, right?
We do. It's a night game, and coming off a bye week, it was a good time for us to have a bye week too, because we were banged up a little bit at some key positions, and as always, it's good just to get a little time to refresh physically and mentally from the deal. But we got a good 8-week stretch here now, and it'll be good for our guys to get back after it this week.
Well, when I saw you had the bye week, it jumped out at me as an opportunity to get you on here and talk to you about something that I've always found extremely hard, even at the college level, and was fortunate enough to have you as a quality control coach at Tennessee with me and working in the background and helping me. I was a position coach at Tennessee, University of Tennessee, and I had the special teams that I had the tight ends, and you know, halftime I was coaching the fullbacks, and I looked up going into that season. I had no idea how I was going to have time to coach specialists. And let's face it, that's a hard position, to three positions to coach, long snapper, kicker, and punter. So I was the most relieved guy in the state when Coach Dooley brought you on board as quality control, someone that I could bounce things off of. So I took that to a, thinking about it at the high school level, you even have less help. Right now I'm just thinking about ways that we can help high school coaches to organize the practice, organize the meetings, and all the type of things that go into that with specialists. Can you tap into that a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, it, like you said, it's really a unique deal. And I think a lot of guys just are almost afraid to touch it because they don't want to do the wrong thing, or they don't know exactly what's right. And they just see at the college level, it's almost like a relief when you got a veteran kicker, punter, or snapper in there that kind of have developed their routine, and they just are able to let them go and kind of do their thing. But when you've got younger guys in there, it can be tough. And we've done a couple deals in the state of Wisconsin. Every year we kind of divide the staff up to three different locations, and we go around and just talk ball for, everybody gets about 15 minutes up there. So I've gone up there and talked about the specialists. I went into it thinking these guys could care less about what I'm getting up there and talking about. And then after we do kind of our main deal, we break up into smaller classrooms and everything. And every year there's 30 people that come in there and are asking questions on exactly what you're talking about. And it's always been pretty good received because these guys want to know how can we help them. And it's something that, to jump on the call with you guys today and just share a few things, whether it's two things that they can really hit on with their kickers, or maybe it's two or three things with the punters that they can really stress. But it's something that definitely is probably overlooked at the high school and the college level as well.
So, yeah. Coach, tell us a little bit. You've been on the side of being the specialist, being the kicker, and for a lot of even high school programs today, I know definitely having coached at the small college level, we do have those specialists who only punt and kick, and even now I think you start to see a lot of guys who just long snap. And we go into our position meetings, we do all that kind of stuff, and it was always like, okay, what do we do with these guys? Because guys who are handling those things or coaching other positions on the staff, I know that I would invite them into our meetings so they felt a part of something, and I encourage some of my other coaches to bring them around too, that we want them to feel part of a team. But I guess, how do you deal with that situation? What's the best thing to do with those guys and with their time as you go into some of those off-field periods?
I think you've got a really good point there. We've done a couple of things. We'll go into a meeting and there's film from the day before. We have our stuff that we'll talk about and go through and kind of plan for practice. But if that's an hour long meeting and that's a lot of time for these specialists to to sit there and talk about tomorrow's practice or what went on with today's practice. And so we've done a couple different things. Like, we've sent the guys into some of these other meeting rooms just to kind of get a feel for, man, these guys have to grind, man. They're sitting here for an hour and they got to stay awake for an hour and learn this stuff and get it down. And and so, you know, like you said, just trying to get them to feel a little bit more part of the team. And we don't do that all the time, but we've done it throughout training camp here or there. We'll throw them into a different meeting room just so they kind of get a taste of what these other guys are going through. But, you know, I think it's probably unique in every situation, depending on, are you in camp, are you in season? You know, some of our meetings, they lead right up into practice. So naturally the specials, we do all of our special teams right at the beginning of practice. So, you know, we cut these guys loose because they're going down there and they're, you know, they're getting ready. They're out in the field a half hour before most of the team starts shuffling their way out there. We use some of that time that way. You know, they're getting their extra foam roll and stretch, all that kind of stuff in the weight room. And so they use it the right way. But I think there are ways that you got to try to be, you got to find a way to keep these guys busy in some regard. I don't think you just make up stuff as you go just so they're not sitting down in the locker room, but I think you gotta tailor it towards your practice a little bit. And like I said, I mean, if you can get out there have them out there early and working on some drill work and working on some different things. And I think it can be beneficial for them that way.
Is there any merit, and this is a ball coach in me coming out, and once again, it's you're sitting there, and I think it's great that we're talking about the meeting first.
Yeah.
Taylor, you're unique from a standpoint of having played position and all that in high school, and then you've been a kicker and all the way up through the NFL, and now you've gotten to the coaching ranks, and you're obviously trying to learn as much as you can about the scheme, and you have been at all these places. So you're I guess where I'm going with that is that you are really totally dedicated to it. But is there a place in high school even to, if you've got a sharp kicker or punter and maybe a snapper and all the specialists I've ever been around, guys like Pat Manley at the Bears and you and different people like that were sharp enough to do this. But if you had a kid like that in high school, is there any merit to having them actually look at your special teams video on Huddle or whatever and seeing what they can come up with? Or is that just going to turn them off? I don't know. I'm looking for something that you could do with someone that was very talented in that area.
No, I think you're right onto something right there. And I guess for me, I think I am unique in a way that I've been in their shoes. I've been out there in those big situations. I know that if we're telling a punter to directional right on something from the middle of the field and there's a right to left wind, that's a pretty high, or I should say low percentage punt. Like that's a tough thing to do. Or maybe we're a left to left kickoff team and we're trying to tell them to pound it deep in the left corner, but there's a left to right wind that's going to bring the ball to the middle of the field. You know, I think it's all about putting those guys in position to have success. And so I've been in those shoes, so I understand that. But for 95% of the special teams guys out there or coaches in general that have never done that or maybe even thought of it in that regard, that can be a little bit more challenging. So I think you're exactly right. If you've got a kicker that you trust or a punter that's a veteran guy and he's, you know, any feedback that you can get from him or whether it's the stadium that you're playing in pregame or it's sometimes those guys are seeing things a little bit differently or they've got a different perspective on it just because they're out there. And I mean, I lean on those snappers a lot, the feedback that we get during the game, and you see what you can see from the sidelines, but they're the ones out there feeling it. And they're the ones seeing the twist games or some of the stems that are going on. And so I think that's really good stuff. If you can get some of that feedback from those guys and get a little bit of help, but cause it's tough. If you've never been in those shoes in the end, those kickers, those punters, those guys drive a lot of what is going on in special teams. If those guys are on, your special teams units are probably going to be pretty good. And so I think it's so important to put those guys in position to have success.
Charlie, kind of dovetailing with what we talked about last week, I do, and we're talking about meetings here again, I do think it would be good for them to understand, you know, we talked to Steve Fairchild and he was talking about the red zone and how each week he would sit down with the special teams coach and the head coach to go over, okay, at what point are we thinking to kick here? And I think for that kicker to understand that, hey, we're doing everything we can to set you up for success. We know when we have points and that we're not going to take chances to take that out of your hands. I think maybe emphasizing some of that too, even if it's just a short meeting with him to explain, hey, this is what's going on this week. This is what we're looking at. This is what we're thinking in these situations, I think puts the emphasis on him, how important he is to the team, that we just don't see him as a leg that comes out there wherever we put him out there, that we're trying to plan and set him up for success as well.
For sure, without a doubt. And these guys, and we try to tell them all the time, especially I'm fortunate right now, we've got some older guys at the positions, but I try to hit them all the time, man. You guys have earned a voice, man. You guys can be leaders. You guys can jump around the locker room at halftime when things aren't going as well as we want them to go, like go around and pump guys up and like kind of earn some of that role. But I think exactly what you're talking about, the more you can tie them in and get them thinking in that regard, I think the better, because I mean, let's be real. It's the nature of that position. You're on an island, you're isolated from the team, whether it's these meetings, whether it's practice, and if guys have the right approach to it and they're doing things the right way, the other guys on the team will respect them. You know, if they're kind of doing their own thing and they're just kind of there when they need to be there. I mean, obviously it can be a different position that way. So I think any way you can tie them in that way and get them, get them thinking how the importance of their role and the field position in this upcoming game, all that kind of stuff, man, the better.
Haley, you were, I don't know if you were a two-way player, but you played offense or defense in high school, right?
Correct, yep.
Were you both?
I was a quarterback and then played some linebacker as well. So that was back in the South Dakota days. We didn't didn't take much to be out there.
Well, so now let's fast forward. A lot of the specialists are just that. They're specialists that do just that. What's your take on as practice gets going, as far as having them out there on a scout team, and probably not taking on an ISO or anything like that, but having them out there as a DB playing a deep third or whatever. I mean, what's your take on that for a high school program?
I think if the guys are smart enough to manage it, like if they're the starter and as long as they're, like you said, they're not in there banging and they're smart enough to take care of their body, their legs the right way. I mean, I think that's fine, you know, and I'm thinking about it from a college standpoint. I would probably not put starting guy out there just because I believe so much at this level of just taking care of the body. And when you go into the game fresh, feel better mechanically, things are smoother and just everything works a little bit more fluid. And but I think at the high school level, if you're smart about it, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think back to like you were talking about, I was playing quarterback and playing linebacker and came to college and I was lost. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I'm supposed to sit here on the sidelines the whole practice. You only know what you know. And I think in high school, it's, you know, if we need bodies and we want to keep those guys involved. And quite frankly, I've never been around a high school deal where you're just kicking. So it's hard for me to kind of see what you would do with those guys. Cause like you said, you're limited with staff and how you can take care of them, all that kind of stuff. I think at a lot of colleges now there's at least a graduate assistant or someone that's assigned to guiding these guys a little bit, but at high school it might be a little bit different. So I don't see any problem at all with throwing those guys out there and keeping them busy that way. And as long as they're smart and taking care of their legs, and that's the biggest aspect I think of it for me.
Taylor, I know we're going to get into some of the fundamentals here in a second, but as you mentioned, keeping them fresh. I know at the college level, and again, we didn't have necessarily that specialist coach. We had guys who coached special teams units, and our kickers essentially were, for lack of better words, they were on their own for a lot of it in terms of getting their work in. And as I watched them work sometimes, especially as the season wore on, like any player at any position, I wondered, were they maybe getting too much of a load? Too many kicks, too many repetitions, especially, again, as the season wore on. Early season, not worried so much, but as we get to where we're at right now, mid-season, heading into late season, is that important, and do you want to be very conscientious about how many reps they get?
Without a doubt. And so I would say this. You can get so much better as a kicker or as a punter without even touching a football, okay? And so I remember when I came to Wisconsin as a freshman, I didn't have any guidance and we kicked every day throughout training camp. I looked back and all of a sudden I was like, I kicked 17 days straight and my leg. There's finally a point where I was like, I told the coach, I was like, if you want me to be able to kick during the season, like I gotta get my leg back. I'm going to get hurt here. And kind of my rule of thumb during camp right now, like I'll never have these guys kick more than 3 days in a row. Most of the time, the guys that are going to be the starting punter, the starting kicker, the starting kickoff guy, those guys, I try to maybe like 2 days on, 1 day off, and then kind of stagger it like that. But you really got to have a good plan for them. And it's really the reps are quality over quantity. And I think especially at the high school level, these guys want to just go out and bang footballs. All of a sudden they look back and they hit 80 to 100 kicks in a day. When I was training, like a good work day for me would be maybe 25 to 30 field goals and taking your time and making them count in a game. You never funny with these, they have these tripods, obviously that they're the sticks that they're kicking their field goals off of. And to me, that's like a quarterback out there just standing there throwing at a stationary target on a wall. Like that's not real. That's not a game situation. And so every, you know, you want it to be game like, and I learned that when I was in Minnesota, Ryan Longwell, like he wouldn't kick off those because it wasn't real, you know, and not all kickers are fortunate enough to have that where they can always have the snap and the hold. But so there's a time and place for that. But I think really, you know, I encourage our guys here, you know, we get out there pre-practice, go through kind of a routine. We go through some drill work where they might have a couple one-step kicks and a couple of kicks they hit down the line, and they might hit three or four off those sticks, and then it's full operation and might be getting 12 where we move around hash to hash and kind of get a feel for it that way. And they get their five during the team setting, and that's it. We shut her down. And if something didn't feel right, maybe we'll go inside and we'll hit five more or something. A good day is having 25 game situation. Obviously you can never simulate what the game exactly is going to be like, but you want it to be full operation. You want to make those reps count. And so right now for us, we're doing that on, obviously as a college team playing on Saturdays, we have kind of our big work day on Tuesday. Those guys will hit kickoffs and field goals on Tuesday. And then we come back Thursday and we kind of do all four phases. And so they're kicking Tuesday, Thursday, and game day. Same thing in the NFL. Right now, the trend for NFL guys is to not kick 2 days prior to the game. So a lot of NFL teams are kicking Tuesday, Wednesday, or I'm sorry, it'd be like our Tuesday, Wednesday. Obviously, mm-hmm. They're playing on Sunday, but they're taking off 2 days before the game. So I think it's really important that these guys understand the importance of being fresh. For me, if I was fresh, I could swing up and through the ball. My legs felt good. If your legs are tired and they're not feeling right, now your mechanics go downhill. And when your mechanics go downhill, your kicking starts to go downhill. So that's a big aspect of that for the, you know, just kind of managing them and how many kicks they take during a practice. You really got to put them on a pitch count.
You touched on something there that made me flash back to a couple of weeks ago. Keith and I had Bobby April on the podcast, and Bobby was touching on, you know, a lot of it was just the big picture thing. But one of the things that Keith actually asked him, you know, was about just how you practice special teams, meaning that you go out there sometimes and it's 10-minute punt period. And we were talking about the importance of actually situational football and running your group out there and making them do it. You know, I've been a part of where you bring the kicker out and the team gets on both sides and you try to put the pressure on them and whatnot. And I've always kind of rolled my eyes thinking that it's not exactly what it's going to be like. What's at stake. It's really the pressure part of it. But can you address that a little bit? I mean, I do believe there's something to be said, having been a special teams coach myself, about making those big guys – a lot of times they're on the field already, but making your team get out there from the sideline, six or seven guys, making your kicker come from the sideline and go through that mental repetition of what it takes prior to making the field goal.
Without a doubt. I think you're right, Charlie. I mean, we get so accustomed that we get into such a habit of just it's field goal period, hurry up and move it here, and then move it to the other hash, move to the other hash. And I think there's a time and place for it because you have to get your kicks in and you got to get some reps in and all that kind of stuff. But you got to find a way to simulate that game situation. So I've over the years gone to our head man about we're doing stuff during camp, but we're scrimmaging. Like let's just, when we're doing team move the ball every once in a while, let's just throw a field goal in here. So these guys, like you said, the linemen got to get used to running over and the kicker and punter have to get used to running on from the sideline. And that's so important because you get those kickers, they just move around. And, you know, when in the game do you ever, when they're warming up, these guys see so many young guys they kick a ball and they hurry up and you know, whether they make it or miss it, they hurry up, grab another one, they kick another one. That's not real. You got to get used to standing around a little bit and on the sideline. And because as you guys know, it's you might have a field goal early in the game and all of a sudden there's nothing until later in the fourth quarter. And so you got to be able to practice that way. And you can never simulate it the exact same how it's going to be in a game. But I do think you've got to be creative and find ways to get those O-linemen and the field goal unit used to what it's going to be like in a game, because it's not just stand out there and move around and you're hitting multiple in a row. It's not how it works.
The closest thing that comes to my mind and being a really, really bad golfer, that's I've oftentimes gone out to the driving range and thought, I'm getting better. And then I go to, I go get on that first tee box and I realize I did not get that much better, to be honest.
Yeah.
I know Keith wants us to get to these drills here, and we are, just a second. And we'll draw all these up, and because it's really hard to talk a lot about stuff like that on a podcast. But I wanted to – something else you just said, virtual reality and things like that out there. Have you seen anything out there? Because some of it's not that expensive. Is there anything out there you've come across, Taylor, for putting pressure on a kicker or where they can simulate their job on a VR machine or something like that, or just a headset? Have you seen anything like that?
You know what? I have not. I've heard of a couple different guys and companies that have kind of pitched some stuff a little bit more for the quarterbacks, but you know, quite honestly, I haven't seen anything from a kicking standpoint. But it's funny you say that, because there's probably stuff that's going to be, there's always going to be ways to help these guys in different scenarios. And that's probably one of them that's going to, in the next few years, start to come up to light a little bit. And I've tried different things with, one of the things that I'll talk about here in a second, when we get into some of the mechanical stuff or drill work, is, you know, I'm really big proponent of being good with your eyes as a kicker, for instance. And so one of the things that we've done, we've got they're actually glasses that have a camera right in the middle of your eyes right there. And so I've played around with those a little bit so that they can see what can kind of go back and see when they're trying to make contact with the ball, what it looks like. And there's also there's glasses out there that they've been used for receivers or for probably different positions, but they you can adjust how fast they're like flashing. They go black, and you can make them go black slow, or you can make them go real fast. But it really makes you focus and train your eyes. And so I played around with a couple of little things like that. I did that a little bit more on my own, but haven't got into the virtual reality stuff yet, though.
Taylor, a quick question on the mental side of things. We do it all the time, and I think there's probably a coaching point in here too. Timeout to ice the kicker, is it effective or is it for dramatic effect?
Well, I think the stats show that it does affect these guys. It's one of those things. The more you can get them thinking about it, I think at the college level, the mental side of the game is something that you always try to find ways that you can separate yourself. And I try to get these guys, everybody's lifting, everybody's running, everybody's going out and kicking and doing all this kind of stuff. But how can we separate ourselves? How can we do something differently? And so I try to challenge them on the mental side of the game. We did a book report this summer on the book called The Inner Game of Tennis. It's an awesome read. Yeah. And so I try to challenge those guys. Every once in a while, we'll come in and I'll just ask them, hey, go find find an article on the mental side of the game. So get some digging around on the internet, looking at stuff, and kind of go around the room and talk about it a little bit. But the mental side of the game for college guys, the really elite kids, like kids that get the opportunity to play at the next level, I think those are the ones that icing a kicker probably doesn't affect as much. But I would say 90% of the kickers at the college level, the more they're thinking about it out there and standing out there on an island, it's a unique deal, man. And it's I would say it affects guys more than not.
Taylor, with that in mind, I see all the time some guys who there is no reaction to that whistle, and then other teams, I swear they're doing it intentionally, where once that whistle's blown, the snapper's going to go ahead and snap it anyway and give his guy basically a free attempt at it, a free look at it out on the field. Is that something you try to work in, or do you not want your guys thinking about that?
You never go into it thinking, okay, they've got one timeout. Are they going to blow it here? Right. Are they not going to blow it? You have to have that exact same routine and go into every kick the exact same way every single time. But if the snapper gets it off and absolutely go and hit it, because then you get a feel for it. It's almost like you just get it out of your system a little bit. You get one out of your system, you feel better after that first one, and you know, maybe you get a feel for the wind a little bit. So anyway, you can, if you can get it off. Now, you know, I don't, to be quite honest, I'm not sure the exact rule on, like, if it's the whistle's clearly blown dead and these guys are snapping it after the fact and kicking it, I mean, I think they can flag you for a delay of game there. Right. Correct. So, so I think now if it's one of those bang, bang deals and you happen to get the snap and the kickoff, then I think it's always going to benefit you. Obviously they have to be careful with that.
Let's get to a couple quick drills here. I know that once again, it's hard to do it when you're on a podcast, but we'll draw these up. We'll get them from you. What are two of your favorite drills when it comes to a place kicker?
I think from a drill standpoint for me, like I kind of hit on a little bit ago, but you can get so much better without even going out and hitting a ball. And a lot of the drill work that I have guys do is it's really more the muscle memory aspect of things. And so when you start talking about for kickers, for instance, your steps, that's really your foundation of everything you do. And I should really probably backtrack for a second here. As far as kicking goes, like there's no right way to kick. There's no, just because so-and-so in the NFL kicks like this, or just because whoever, every kicker is a little bit different, is unique in their own way. There's no right way to do things, but there's basic principles, basic fundamentals that everybody can use to really hit the ball higher, longer, straighter, more consistently. And so how do we get to a point where we can replicate that stuff over and over and over again? And for me, like I see some of these high school kickers now and I'm like, holy cow, I wasn't doing that at that age. I mean, some of these kids are getting so talented at a young age. I was more of just an athlete that worked really hard at it. That's how I became a good kicker. And for me, when our other specialists towards the end of practice, when those guys were over there talking about what they did last night or whatever, I was just down in the corner repping my steps over and over and over again. And I'd put myself, talk about that mental side of the game. The one thing that comes up over and over again when you're doing research is visualization, right? And so I would just sit there and I would work on my steps and I would, you know, I'd visualize myself in the left hash and I'd visualize myself in the right hash. And I would just go around, move around the field when the, you know, when they were doing teamwork on one end of the field, I'd jump down the uprights on the other end. And then I'd go through my kickoff steps, you know, kind of like my menu of the coach said, hey, I want you to go left to left here. If I want you to go left to right here, if I want a mortar kick here, just kind of I'd work my full menu of steps. And to me, that was a lot of my drill work, because if your steps are perfect, then you've got a chance every time. It's no different than a long jumper going through and making sure he's taken all of the board on every single long jump or a high jump, whatever, pole vault or whatever it may be. Your steps are your foundation of everything you do. And so that's from a drill standpoint. When I warmed up to kick, what I would do is I'd go through those steps and I'd make sure I'm hitting the exact same spot every single time. And like you said, it's hard to kind of talk through some of this stuff without showing video or showing it in person. Finding muscle memory drills where you're practicing things the right way. I see so many guys, for instance, now when we're getting ready for a game and I'll watch other kickers from other teams. And I mean, obviously we're playing, this is Division I football. And I kind of get a kick out of watching some of the things that these guys do. For instance, a lot of kickers will do one step drills where it's a good drill to just kind of get your leg going and you're focusing on just making contact with the ball. But when you're kicking off the ground, like you have to in college and you have to in the NFL, you have a nice a deep plant foot, meaning your heel is about even with the ball. So it's kind of like hitting a wedge shot in golf. You're coming down on top of the ball. That's what's making it jump up. As opposed to in high school, you can use that block and the ball's sitting up. And so when you're kicking that way, you're actually hitting the ball on an upswing, much like you're teeing the ball up with the driver. And so I'll see when you're kicking the ball off a block, especially like some of these guys use a 2-inch block, your toe is even with the ball. So there's a huge difference there. And so I'll see guys working on these no steps, just making contact with the ball. And they're standing there with their toe even with the ball. And it's making them a worse kicker, because that's not how you kick. And they're kicking off the ground. They need to be having a nice deep plant foot that they're allowing themselves just to make contact. So essentially they're drilling into their muscle memory something that they're not even going to do during a game. And so I always see stuff like that. And so I think from a fundamental standpoint, as a kicker, you've got your steps that are your foundation. And as a kicker, you want to do the same thing the same way every single time. Meaning if I take my steps, if I walk my steps straight back and take a 90-degree angle over, if I hit that ball 58 yards, I want to hit it 58 yards every single time. Doesn't matter if it's an extra point. Doesn't matter if it's a 52-yard field goal. I want to hit that exact same ball. And I think back to when I was in high school, I would kind of just chip through the extra points. And then on 50-plus yard field goals, I was swinging as hard as I could, you know, and that's just a recipe for inconsistency. And so, you know, I think for high school coaches in particular, you always want to get these guys to control what they can control, right? And one of the things that you can control are your steps. And so there are no right steps either. You see a lot of guys take three steps back and two steps over. that doesn't mean that's the end all be all. I think the most important thing is that you're comfortable in your approach. Got to be somewhat close to the ball because we have to obviously have a good get off time, but you have to be comfortable there where what's going to put you in position to have the most success. And so those steps are really your foundation. I'll teach these guys, always walk your steps straight back towards your target. And then we'll always take them over at a 90-degree angle. And the reason for that is in high school, those hashes are so wide. And even in college, in the NFL, you're obviously those hashes are right along the upright. But in high school, with those wide hashes and on big angle kicks, if you aren't taking those steps at a 90-degree angle, it's going to catch up with you. And when your foundation is off, everything can be off. And it's as little as, say this, like if you walk your step straight back and 90-degree angle over, let's say you are 100 inches from the tip of your toe to the ball. If you are off by even, let's say you take an 85-degree angle or a 95-degree angle, now all of a sudden you're 106 inches from the ball or you're 94 inches from the ball. Like that's enough for you to, now you're reaching or now you're kind of stuttering to get to the ball. And that's, those are the things that you tell these kickers, man, in high school, you guys work so hard. You do so much throughout the off season. Don't miss a kick in a game because your steps are off. There's so many variables in high school that make kicking difficult, whether it's poor field conditions, not the best snapper, not the best holder, because you don't get to spend a ton of time with them. There's a lot of wind because you're in a big open field. There's all these variables that come into play, but always try to control the things that you can control, and that's your steps. Sorry, I got off on a little tangent there as I got rolling.
No, I'm sitting here shaking my head going, wow. I mean, when you're also trying to get your tight end or whatever to play along with that. But what about the punting game? Got a couple quick
tips for punters? If I could hit on this real quick, because this kind of ties in to Charlie with kickoff. So one of the things that it's funny, the high school coaches will, or the high school coach, I'm sorry, the parents, when I used to do my camps and I used to do lessons, all that kind of stuff years ago, they'd always say, Taylor, how come my son's field goals go just as far as the kickoffs? A lot of these guys are hitting 50-yard field goals, but then they struggle getting the ball to the end zone. And it's because of this, that the longer the approach to the ball, the more room for error. And the faster you go in your approach to the ball, the more room for error. And so I think these high school guys see the best kickers in the world on TV. They see guys in the NFL and they see big time Division I, the best of the best. And they see these longer approaches. So then they think, okay, I got to do what they're doing. But in the end, making good contact with the ball, that's what makes the ball go far. And so when you're kicking a field goal and you're 2 yards from the ball, it's easy to make good contact. And when you make good contact, the ball goes far. And so now all of a sudden you get these guys with 10 or 11 yard approaches to the ball and they're slapping it off their toe. And I always tell, you got to be honest with yourself. If you hit 10 kickoffs and you miss hit 6 of them, you can't handle that approach. The approach is supposed to help you, not hinder you. And so, and Charlie, I don't know if you even remember, we did that a little bit with Mike Pilardi, who, by the way, is doing an awesome job right now punting. He's still playing and been playing for a long time. But Mike Pilardi at Tennessee, he was kind of mishitting some of his kickoffs a little bit early in the season. We said, let's bump you up to 5 yards and let's just make contact. One of your strengths is your pure power, your ability to, you've got a strong leg, but if you're mishitting the ball, you're not using your strengths, right? And so then he kind of got in a rhythm and was just banging them over and over again deep in the end zone. And so I think that's goes back to talking about your steps, your foundation. Like I'd have my guys rep do 15 run-throughs, just working on your steps so that you're absolutely hitting the exact same spot every single time. Because if you're reaching or now all of a sudden your steps, you're stuttering, all that kind of stuff, it's hard to make good contact. The kickoff is number one, it's kind of a max effort deal, but it's also a high difficulty. I mean, there's a high level of difficulty there because you're bringing speed into the ball and you're timing it up and it has to be perfect timing. And there's the guys that can handle it are some of the elite guys. They're the good ones. But you'll always see some of the good field goal kickers that just struggle with kickoffs for a lot of that reason.
Well, as a special teams coach myself, I can say that the maddest I would ever get at a specialist would be the kickoff guy that maybe left it in the middle of the field too.
Yeah.
That when you were looking to put it in the corner. And I know that's, it's not always fair to them, but that was something to me that was really important. If you were scheming it up to have that thing over there somewhere, and all of a sudden that ball in the middle of the field, you're holding your breath. So a lot goes into it. A lot goes into all that. What about punts?
I mean, you look at punting and you look at, field goal kicking, kickoffs, punting may be the most difficult of the three, and especially for a high school guy. And because really, essentially, you're hitting a moving target, right? I mean, you're walking, that ball's moving, and there's a lot of things that have to go right. And I think the trend in the past, especially, was when you're recruiting a punter, is like, hey, let's go find a big, strong kid and tall kid. And when he gets here, got long levers, he's strong, and he'll figure it out once he gets here, right? And I think the reason for that is, first of all, guys become good punters when they come to college and it becomes their job. They're working at it every single day. There's so many intricacies of it that have to be perfect. And you always hear about the drop. The drop has to be, that if you have a nice flat drop, chances are you're going to give yourself a chance to hit a good punt. But the guys in the NFL, they're giving themselves a nice flat drop 99% of the time. So now they're hitting good punts 85% of the time, right? But high school kids, they might be giving themselves a good drop 40 to 50% of the time. They might only hit good punts 15 to 20% of the time. That's kind of how it's going to work out. And so, that's something, again, it doesn't take any talent to just work on your drop. And so guys can walk the field over and over again, just putting the ball line to their hip and just working on that nice flat drop, or just should almost bounce straight back up. And for me, as a left, I was a lefty, so that ball I kept it kind of in my fingertips, not way back in your hand, but just kind of naturally in your fingertips. And I would tilt it in at about 1 o'clock. For a righty, it's tilted in slightly about 11 o'clock. And that's not the end all be all. It all depends on how well your swing is. Like if you are, punting's all about being linear. And if you swing across your body a little bit more, then you can get away with tilting the ball in a little bit more. But just working that drop over and over and over again. I mean, I remember when I was in New Orleans, Steve Weatherford, he used to just walk around the field, just laps over and over again. And if you're giving yourself a chance, if you're giving yourself a nice flat drop, you're giving yourself a chance to hit a good punt. But so that's probably of importance in punting, 1A, and maybe 1B is probably even happens before it, but is the catch. And the reason I say the catch, there's so many guys that want to catch the ball into their body. And when you're talking about having a good get-off time in college and pro level, for instance, and you want to be at 2-0 or right in that 2-0 area, if you're letting the ball get into your body now, like those are fractions of seconds that are so valuable. So I really have my guys just focus on catching the ball with their arms extended right out in front. So now it's already in position. You don't have to manipulate the ball and move it around and get it in that position. But, when you catch the ball clean, you're getting into that drop and you're getting into the mechanics, your punt so much sooner and more effectively. And if guys are bobbling it and they're struggling, being able to spin the laces, so they're getting the laces facing up, all that kind of stuff, it affects them a lot. So I think having those punters get as many catches as they can. If you've got two kickers and two punters, whatever it is in high school, those guys can sit there and they should get 100 catches every single day, and they should get 100 drops every single day. Like that's not even, there's no negotiation there. Like that's the foundation for you as a punter, is the drop and the catch. And then the last thing that's important is the swing. And one of the things that a lot of younger kickers and punters, everybody wants to make the ball go far, right? And so where guys get in trouble, they either, as a field goal kicker, they swing around, or as a punter, they think about swinging out. And really, the ball has to go up before it goes out. And so you always want to focus on swinging up. And I always try to find ways to help these guys without giving them too many commands, like do this or do that. So I'll have them focus on, hey, let's try to hit a 4-6 hanger here. Let's try to hit a 4-7 hang. And by doing that, in their head, they're thinking, okay, if I want to hit this big time hang time, I got to really think about swinging up. And when you swing up, number one, your special teams coach is excited because that ball's hanging up there and we're forcing fair catches and we're not having returns on us. But it's also that's the swing that you need to generate the ball that you want. That's the swing that you need that makes the ball go up and turn over. When you start thinking about driving the ball 50 yards, that's what gets you in trouble, and you get the ball off the end of your toe, and you get end over end punts, and that's what gets you in trouble in a hurry. And not only that, but that's when you're hitting line drives, right? And so that's a big aspect of the punting too, is just having that great swing where you're thinking about swinging straight up and through the ball. And you'll see guys, some of these rugby guys now, again, it goes back to, there's no right way to do this thing, right? But in the end, the more linear you are, if you can walk in a straight line and swing in that straight line, the percentages over time are going to add up that you're going to be more consistent that way than is if you're veering off to the right and swinging across your body. Can you hit some big punts that way? Absolutely. But over time, you're going to be less consistent. That stuff will catch up to you and catch up to the team in a hurry.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate you taking some time and sharing some great ideas here, whether it's in season or preseason or postseason. I think all of these things are helpful to coaches throughout, because we all have these issues with getting the most out of our kicking game, getting the most out of our punters. And I think for us, being able to hear from someone like you give us the details is very helpful.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I could help out, man, and I appreciate you guys having me on. I hope I was beneficial for these guys to grab a couple things here and there that can help their specialists out.
No, Taylor, it was great. I think just we probably stole more time than what I told you we would, but I think it feeds into the narrative of just how much there is.
Yeah.
You know, we could probably have a 2 or 3 hour podcast here if we needed to pick your brain enough. So thanks a lot. Hey, and good luck in that Big Ten stretch you're getting ready to get into.
I appreciate you guys. Take care, man.
Well, Coach, some great stuff there from Taylor, and I think things we need to think about. So just because we don't have that guy who can coach our specialists doesn't mean we can't do some things to monitor their workload, to put them through some drills, maybe give them some work on their own stuff, but also kind of give them some parameters for how much we want them kicking, because as Taylor pointed out, they can overdo that, especially if left on their own. So really impressed with him. I could see why he is one of the up-and-coming coaches in the special teams area. Would love to hear your impressions of what Taylor had to say.
Well, having worked with Taylor, none of that really surprised me, as far as just how you can tell how much time he spent at it. And that's really been his whole professional life. But I think that when you step back and look at it from a high school coach's standpoint, unless you are fortunate enough to have a Taylor or something like that, I think a lot of it's got to do with what you do preseason, the off-season work, visiting people like Taylor, and coming up with an organized plan that fits you, because they're all different. If you heard Taylor say it once, he probably said it 2 or 3 times there. There's no one exact way, and that means maybe the motion that your kicker has, all the way up to what you do with your specialist in practice, because each situation is different. Every kid is different. One kicker, one punter, you might be able to turn loose and let them go do a little bit on their own. And there's others that need the structure, just to be completely honest. So the other things that jumped out at me, Keith, is that, and I've always thought this, because I've never kicked a field goal, I've never punted a ball in the game, but every time I hear them talk, or I've heard Taylor talk, it always brings me back to golf. And once again, this is a bad golf game I'm talking about, but with a golf swing, you start messing around with it and you end up messing with 2 or 3 things at once, and you really got a problem then. And when I hear them talk about correcting and making the physical adjustments that go with it, most of the time it's focusing on one thing. And a good example of what he just talked about was, you know, kicking off. You common, what you would think would be common sense would be to get further back or get more speed going to the ball on a kickoff. Well, in actuality, it's a lot like golf right there, because if you and I go out there and swing for the green, then we're probably going to go pick it up in a green, but it's going to be some guy's yard green. It's not going to be in a fairway. So you hear Taylor talk about shorten the approach, and you're going to end up getting a longer kick. So little things like that, it's really incredible when you start thinking about how much that can help you, as far as particularly if you're running an offense and defense, you're talking about field position.
Coach, what are you going to have for us on First Down Playbook this week?
Well, we talked about it a little bit in the podcast. I'm going to get with Taylor, and Taylor's actually done some things for our website, a couple videos. We'll see if we can make those available, and also we'll get Taylor to get a couple drills, and we'll draw those up for you. And you can find those on the USA Football website and also at blog.firstdownplaybook.com.
Absolutely. Well, Charlie, I am excited to continue this game plan as we go through the season. You've been lining up some great guests for us. If this is the first one you're hearing, I encourage you to go back and listen through all the great people we've had on this podcast so far this season. So, Charlie, I appreciate it as always, and I look forward to our conversation next week.
Thanks, Keith. Look forward to being here.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.